Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:27 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is Friday, February 15th. And today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And if we have a review of what's been happening this week, then European stock markets have been mostly range-bound. And the majority finished in slightly negative territory at the end of today. The FTSE in particular is a bit of a standout in the region because it's been really very flattered by the weakness of the pound. And the breakout that we've seen above the 6,000 area isn't actually replicated when one, for example, redenominates the index into dollars. Of course, the FTSE, which has been range-bound for almost 2 years, this is an important breakout. And the fact that we've had such a good run and that it has been extended gives it plenty of room in which to consolidate, and that does look increasingly like what we're going to get. And the consolidation that has been going on really has been most pronounced in Europe. In Wall Street, the S&P 500 is finishing down on the day and has been hovering here above the 1500 area for much of the last couple of weeks. And the Dow Jones has been pretty much very steady, really, below this 14,000 level. It's been going sideways now for over 2 weeks. So what we've seen in the US has been primarily that the markets have been either ranging sideways or with a mild upward bias, whereas the bigger pullback has been in Europe over the last few weeks. In Asia, the Chinese market has been closed this week for the New Year holiday and will reopen on Monday. The Hang Seng was a little bit stronger in here today and has been pretty steady during the latter half of this week. The Nikkei, which has had this very powerful rally, very much in tandem with the weakness of the yen, has at least paused here and was down today by about 1%. And the yen, having been as strong as 92.23 earlier on today, is closing out the day at 93.4. It's becoming increasingly likely that the G20 is not going to castigate the Japanese in its statement. And since what we can expect is a fairly opaque statement from the G20, and there isn't really a strong likelihood that anybody is going to castigate the Japanese, then the downtrend for the yen is likely to remain very much a feature of the currency markets, not just in the next few days, but over the next few weeks and potentially months. And that is likely to remain a tailwind for the Japanese equity market over the medium term. In the short term, we are presented with a short-term overbought condition, and the second section in particular has been pulling back over the last week. And that's particularly important because small caps in Japan have generally tended to lead, and the second section is the small cap index. It had such a remarkable advance and broke out of its 4-year range that where it consolidates now is going to be a very good indication of what we can expect from the wider Japanese market. And the fact that it has been pulling back and is likely to find support next week as we see the yen weaken further, then this is a rather attractive point to be thinking about the Japanese market, not least because a number of people have been sitting on the sidelines and watching the market run away from them without really being given an opportunity to participate. In the rest of Asia, Thailand in particular is really worthy of mention because the market bottomed, or the SET index bottomed at 400 back in 2009. And the peak prior to the Asian financial crisis was just above 1600. And the index today is trading at 1521. So we've had a remarkable advance in the last 4 years. And it doesn't look like it's over. But what we are seeing is that this market is really quite overextended when compared to the 200-day moving average. And while we haven't had anything in the way of downward dynamics, we are getting increasingly close to an important area of psychological resistance from a historical perspective. And we're looking at this market being really quite overextended relative to the MA and the susceptible to some reversion in the short to medium term. But over the medium to long term, it does look increasingly likely that the Thai market will actually be able to consolidate and push on to new all-time highs in not too distant future. In the rest of Asia, whereas Europe has had the biggest of the pullbacks and Wall Street has been mostly going sideways, the ASEAN region in particular has been breaking to the upside. And Indonesia is notable in that regard, and because it spent a good length of time ranging, it has quite a bit underneath it. The Filipino market is a very similar situation to the Thai market, only that it doesn't have those historic highs because it didn't really participate in the Asian Tigers phenomenon from the 1990s. So the ASEAN region continues to lead in terms of timing, but also, it leads in terms of where economic growth is really focused. The European economy remains in a recession. The US remains in this slow burn recovery. And Asia doesn't have the same problem with debt. In fact, there is significant room for credit to increase as a percentage of GDP, and particularly in the retail sector, and that is likely to help drive bull markets in the Asian region over the next decade. And that's a major theme, because the companies that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, and particularly the Asian consumer, are likely to remain those that continue to benefit over the medium and indeed the long term. And the fact that Warren Buffett has moved to attempt to take over Heinz yesterday has set the media alight with speculation about who will be the next target. But it also highlights the fact that these types of companies, companies that dominate their respective niches and that have strong cash flows and a good record of paying out dividends and are really leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, are attractive not just as potential takeover candidates, but as investments in their own right. And that is why they're attractive takeover candidates. So rather than attempting to ascertain who will be the next potential takeover candidate, one would probably be have a more productive time in spent in looking at just why these types of companies are attractive in the first place. Because we're presented with the greatest urbanization in history. And the global population of consumers is probably going to increase by an additional 2 billion people in the next 20, 30 years. And that means that the per capita consumption of everything is increasing. And not least because for the first time in history, not only is the are the major population centers of the world representing the greatest pace of economic improvement, but also that that economic wealth is being spread around and that the middle class is expanding. So not only do we have more people, but also we have more people that can afford a better standard of living. And the types of companies that are doing well in this environment are those kinds of companies that many people would have considered kind of boring, such as Heinz. And these are the real big growth companies in that type of environment. So the consumer staples and the consumer discretionary and industrial type companies, and particularly those that make the types of machines that make the products that these people will want. These are all really very attractive types of companies. And what we are starting to see is that the perception of potential economic growth on a global scale continues to improve. So while there are still patches where and people are still very much mired in the thinking that because we had a disappointing fourth quarter, that first quarter is going to be even worse. The fact that Walmart today pulled back by about 3% because this is one of its worst starts to the year in quite a while, is to some extent counterbalanced by the fact that industrial production in the New York area is improving. And the fact that we have seen such a large number of industrially oriented companies starting to break out of multi-year ranges is very heartening indeed. And it's not difficult to start to think about why that might start to be the case. When nanotechnology is starting to come through as not just a dream, but as an investable topic, then that is the kind of story that can get investors really interested, because that will lead to productivity gains. And with productivity gains, we can literally create value. And the fact that the USA has this competitive advantage in energy, and that was exhibited again in here today, where West Texas Intermediate is almost $1.40 weaker today, and it's down to the lower side of the short-term range at the $96 area. But Brent crude, having been as low as $116 and a bit, is closing out the day just a bit lower than $118. So that is where the tightness in supply is most evident. And the spread between US pricing and global pricing continues to expand. The US has got unconventional oil and gas supply coming online. There's a glut of it, and it's keeping a lid on pricing. And that is creating a competitive advantage for the US economy. It's particularly an advantage when we start to see that manufacturing jobs are being brought back in high-tech areas, and that in the chemical industry, the US is a more attractive place to site a factory than Europe because of energy pricing. And it's probably the supreme irony that even though the US didn't sign up for the Kyoto Protocols, that it is one of the few countries that is actually meeting those guidelines because of unconventional oil and gas production. And this is a really very comforting competitive advantage when you start to think about the productivity gains that can be enhanced from low energy costs and advances in technology, and not just in nanotechnology, but in robotics and in factory automation, so that you don't need the same number of people to make the same number of goods, and you don't need the same amount of energy to make the same number of goods, and that the goods that you're making are not only more technologically advanced, but more productive and more attractive from a consumer perspective. And that is the type of thing that can drive a major bull market. So when we look at the S&P, and it has been ranging for the last 14 years, and we look at the FTSE, and it's been in this long range for the last 14 years, and the DAX, even though it's a total return index, has been range-bound for about 14 years. And we look at these indices, and we say, well, the S&P is getting right up to the upper side here, and valuations have expanded somewhat over the last couple of years in this powerful rally from the 2009 lows. And really the question is whether we're going to break out to the upside and sustain a move above 1600, or whether we're going to consolidate in this area. And while that is a short to medium term concern, the very fact that we're seeing such a large number of globally oriented companies, not only in the consumer sector, but in the industrial sector. And in the industrial sector, it is those companies that have a technological edge that are breaking out to new high ground. Well, this is a new bull market for those types of companies. And it is only a matter of time before the bull market for globally oriented companies is translated into a bull market for domestically oriented companies on Wall Street. And when that happens, we will have had the end of a secular valuation contraction, where we have contracting PE ratios and rising dividend yields. So when we look at the medium term, this market is either going to consolidate below 1600 or it's going to consolidate in the region of or above 1600. But once we do get into this area, the chances are that it's going to take some time to digest. It's going to take some time to get perceptions moved around. And that means that a good deal of ranging is probably going to be what we're going to have for upwards of a year, if not 2 years, before we start to get demand really starting to assert itself and we get into a new bull market situation. We posted an index in Comment of the Day last week, and in the chart library it's STALSTOX, and it's the suggested allocation to equities of Wall Street analysts, and I think it aggregates approximately 7 different investment bank views. But the most important thing is that that index topped out in 1999 at a suggested weighting for equities of 70%, and it bottomed in July of last year at 42%. And of course, if it's 42% in equities, it's 58% in bonds. And we've had a huge move into bonds, and there's every evidence that some of that money is now starting to flow back into the equity market. And that flow has helped to curtail the size of the reaction on Wall Street so far. When we look at what the potential is, and we look at the dynamics of what are needed to create a new bull market, well then liquidity is front and center. Now we can have liquidity from central banks, and central banks have a privileged position because they can create money. And they have been doing that with abandon for the last 4 or 5 years. And quantitative easing remains very much a feature of the type of reality that we're presented with in both the bond markets and the equity markets. And equity investors have become liquidity addicts over the last few years. And when liquidity becomes available, we tend to get these very persistent advances. And the current advance for Wall Street is, I think, 13 or 14 weeks to the upside. And it's 13 or 14 weeks to the upside for the Australian index. We haven't got quite that number for a number of these European markets because they've had the deeper reaction. And these liquidity-fueled rallies have tended to go on for longer than people have anticipated, and the reactions subsequently have tended to be deeper. So when we look at some of these markets that have become so very overextended, there is the possibility that we're going to get a sharp pullback and reversion back to the mean, and that will be the next favorable entry opportunity from the perspective of a medium-term investor. What we are seeing with government bonds is that yields have been trending higher in a gradual manner for the majority, and there's a high degree of commonality in the government bond markets. So some of that panicky money that went right into government bonds has been coming out very slowly, and it's been put back to work in the equity markets. And that wall of money that could potentially come out of government bonds and into equities represents a very large amount of liquidity. So even if quantitative easing eventually does come to a close, and if we do move into a new bull market in the next 3 or 4 years, then there won't be the need for quantitative easing. And without the actual requirement for quantitative easing, it means that we're going to see higher yields. And that's a good thing. Now, it's going to put some governments under a great deal of stress because their funding is obviously going to become more expensive, and they're going to have a more difficult time rolling forward all the debt that they've taken out in the last couple of years. And they'll be betting that they can inflate their way and they can grow their way out of their problems. And that would certainly be a best case type scenario. The fact that we've had some of the money coming out of the safe havens has put a bit of pressure on gold prices over the last week, and gold came back today to just about $1,600. The low of the day was at 1598, and it's closing out the day closer to 1608, a little bit under 1609, in fact. And gold has been ranging here. It's been a good time ranging between 1650 and 1700, and it's right back now to 1600, which is the next area of potential support. And the lower side of what has been almost an 18-month range has been in the region of 1550. But it really does need to start to find support here. And if the hypothesis that gold is in an accumulation phase, then it will have to find support here. And it is a little bit overbought in the short term, but it really is for the bulls to prove at this juncture. And if it starts to break down out of this range, well, then that will be different. That will be a different environment to what we've been presented with over the last 10 years. And that will be cause for reassessment. So where gold is at present is a rather interesting level. And where it goes in the next couple of weeks is going to be very telling indeed. Platinum, which has been very range-bound over the last year, has pulled back from the 1700 area, and it was down by $30 in here today. And while this could still be a consolidation here in the region of 1700, an upward dynamic will be required to check potential for some additional downside in the short term. But outside of the precious metal markets, the rest of the commodity complex was reasonably steady in here today. And with the amount of liquidity that is flowing around, the majority of it is currently being attracted to stock markets. And where the greatest activity is now in the commodity complex is in the industrial metals. And we've had a generally steady environment there for much of the last couple of months. And both lead and zinc in particular have taken up positions of relative strength within the industrial commodities. And lumber, which has had a boost from the resurgence in US housing and also from the rebuilding from Hurricane Sandy, is right back up to the $400 area, and it hasn't seen that in quite some time. So if we are seeing a resurgence in global growth perceptions, then that should be a positive for the industrial metals. And while the industrial metal shares, or the mining shares, have yet to really demonstrate that demand is returning to dominance on a sustained basis across the sector, what we are seeing is that relative strength is being exhibited in iron ore miners, and in particular BHP Billiton, which, following a brief pullback yesterday where it recouped its entire decline, improved on its performance in here today. And that is really quite an interesting area right now, because industrial metal miners have been wallflowers for much of the last 2 years amid really quite bearish perceptions about the possibility of synchronized global economic expansion. And while we're certainly not at that extreme yet, certainly perceptions are improving. So when we take a big step back and we look at where the market is right now, we're presented with a short-term overbought condition. But that is against a background where an increasingly large number of shares have broken out of 13 and 14-year ranges. And this represents a new bull market for globally oriented companies. And that's really important. And the fact that we have government bond yields, which are starting to push up, represents the potential top of what has been a 30-year bull in government bond prices. And if we've had a 30-year bull in pricing, then the very biggest bulls are followed by some of the biggest bear markets. And we could be moving in the not-too-distant future into a higher yield type environment, a higher interest rate type environment. And in that environment, equities that can outpace inflation and have a competitive yield are very attractive indeed. And those types of companies are well represented among the autonomies. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.